after Manu had taken his birth, he surrendered himself fully to Lord Brahma, his father, and placed him at the service of Brahma. Placed himself at the service of Brahma. Brahma was pleased with him, and he benedicted him, or rather he gave him some instructions. He told him three things, basically. Have family, beget children who are qualified like yourself, because Manu was so qualified with Satyarupa, your wife. That's the first thing. Act as a progenitor. Second, rule the world in pursuance with Dharma, in pursuance with the principles of Krishna consciousness. And worship the Lord. While this is going on, worship the Lord. How? By the performance of jagya, sacrifice. Jagya vai Vishnu. This is how to please the Lord. Who is that Lord? We've been hearing about him, of course, since the beginning, since the opening verse of the Bhagavatam. Satyam param dhimahi. But we've just heard also that he is the origin of the creation. Aham eva sam eva gre nanyat yat sarasat param. Just imagine a being, an entity, who is so powerful, he is the resource of everything in existence. Countless universes, countless innumerable planets, unlimited living entities, countless universes going withdrawn into the portion of his portion, is Mahavishnu. We've heard all about this. And then with the exhale, the breathing of Mahavishnu, the universes are manifested. Universes, not just planets, not cities, but universes manifest. And then with his breathing in, all withdrawn into this body of the supersoul, the Paramatma of the entirety of material existence, Karana Dakshaya Vishnu. So this is God, and he's just a portion of the portion of the portion. And how to serve him? This is what you can do. You perform this jagga. And then wishing to follow the order of Brahma, Manu then looked for the field of activities, because everyone, in order to serve, needs a field of activities. And actually, this is the best of purposes of the material world. And the material world has several purposes. We could say that it is a field of activities for Lord Brahma to serve this universe. We can say that it is a field of activities for the living entities who are averse to Krishna to keep their illusion that they are the center of existence. But it is also a field of activities so the sadhakas, the devotees, can raise themselves to the highest platform of prema bhakti so that they are qualified to join Krishna in the spiritual world and engage in their relationship with him. So Manu also needed a field of activities, and his particular field was the earth. And what had happened to the earth? It had fallen down, or that, or it hadn't raised itself from the time of the devastation at the end of Brahma's day. So he asked Brahma, he pointed this out to Brahma, perhaps you haven't noted this yet because you've been involved in your acts of creation, where is the earth? Look, it's at the bottom of the Garbhodaksha ocean. So Brahma understood immediately that he couldn't himself, by his own power, great as his power was, he couldn't lift the earth. And then he answered, it is best to let the Almighty Lord direct us. That is perhaps a simple definition of Sharanagati. This is the natural position of the soul. Practically speaking, the material world will always hand us, in so many varieties of ways, complexities, perplexities that are beyond our ability, regardless of how resourceful we are, beyond our ability to sort out, to solve the problems. This is actually the very nature of the material world, because it is daivyesha gunamayi. It is divinely inspired by Krishna, and therefore, because behind the potency of the material world, of the material energy, is Krishna, no one can unravel it. So it is best to let the Almighty Lord direct us, he said. That was text 17. Then, how will the Almighty Lord, who is the creator of all these universes, are springing, mama angso teja sambhava, they are resting upon just a spark of his splendor. How is he going to solve this problem? And here is how he does it. This is incredible, actually. This is the definition of awesome. O sinless Vidura, Maitreya continues, all of a sudden, while Brahma was engaged in thinking, his thinking was dependence upon Krishna to solve the problem of the earth, a small form of a boar came out of his nostril. That is incredible. One would have to think that the good Lord has a sense of humor also. Because he's all-pervading. He is everywhere. He can come out. He can appear from a pillar, as he did with whom? Prahlad, Hiranyakashipu, and Lord Nrisingha. He's already everywhere. So there's no problem from his appearing from a pillar. There's no problem from his appearing from the nostril of Brahma. But yet, when he chooses to appear from the nostril of Brahma, this is amazing. So a small form of a boar came out of his nostril. This is actually so significant. The measurement of the creature was not more than the upper portion of a thumb. Everyone, look at the upper portion of your thumb. Now, some of the upper portion of our thumbs may be smaller or bigger than the upper portions of thumbs of others, but yet it doesn't appear very significant. And yet, out of the nostril, that size, the unlimited, inconceivably powerful, omnipotent Lord appeared. This is a demonstration of his power. He is completely independent. And yet, however he appears, this small, or from a pillar in the form of a half lion, half man, or universes are emanating from his breathing and his skin holes, still he is unlimitedly powerful, inconceivably unlimitedly powerful. When we think of powerful, it is something. We all have concepts of powerful within our mind. What is a concept? What, when someone is powerful, what can he do? An ordinary person, if he's powerful, what can he do? Yes, I also read that yogi who did that. He ground up, but he had to grind it up first. And day by day, he ate a car. And in those days, it was a ambassador too. He ate an ambassador. Very powerful digestion, yes? Or someone else is powerful and he can... What? Someone in this world who is powerful. Yes, in pole vaulting or something. He can jump 18 feet into the air or something. He's a pole vaulter or something. 18 feet. But this is the definition of powerful. And once one digests this definition of powerful, one will not be impressed by anything in this world. Because he is completely independent. That is what powerful means. He can do anything he wants. The person who gets on the pole and jumps his 18, 20 feet into the air, he is pulled down by gravity. He can't just head off into space. But he is completely independent. He can accept any form he wants, and he doesn't lose the power of his independence or his full potency. Even though he appears this big from the nostril of Brahma and in the form of a boar, a hog, old descendant of Bharata. Well, Brahma was observing him because he saw. That boar became situated in the sky in a wonderful manifestation, as gigantic as a great elephant. So immediately from thumb size, he went to elephant size. So you think, wow, that's powerful, that's great. How big is an elephant? How many elephants can we fit in this room? Anyway, through the door it would be difficult. But he was very big. Three, at most four. It would be very crowded though. Four elephants or so, or five maybe, if we really push them, six elephants in here. But he was that big. He was a big elephant in size. Struck with wonder at observing the wonderful boar-like form in the sky, Brahma, with great brahmanas like Marichi, as well as the Kumaras and Manu, began to argue in different ways, various ways. Is this some extraordinary entity come in the pretense of a boar? Well, he just went from the size of a thumb to the size of an elephant and had become situated in the sky. What is this? It is very wonderful, said Brahma, that he has come from my nose. This is incredible. First of all, this boar was seen no bigger than the tip of a thumb, and within a moment he was as large as a stone. My mind is perturbed. Is he the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu? Prabhupada's short purport. Since Brahma is the supermost person in the universe, and he had never before experienced such a form, he could guess that the wonderful appearance of the boar was an incarnation of Vishnu. The uncommon features symptomatic of the incarnation of Godhead can bewilder even the mind of Brahma. So Prabhupada was very fond of criticizing those who claim to be God, or often their followers claim them to be God, claim, oh, he is Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, but they don't perform extraordinary feats like this. Suddenly, they appear from someone's nostril in the form of a boar, and suddenly they're as big as a stone or a... No, but instead they do something, some sleight of hand, and somewhat comes... you're from around that area, some ash or a little bit of gold or something. Huh? Watches. I once saw a magician in Bombay. Part of his act was to produce ash and little gold deities. And he could also, he was quite incredible. He's actually from Hare Krishna. He was actually from Agra. So he could make coins. It was really incredible. Big coins, small coins. Suddenly there was big coins, small coins. Then there were no coins. Then with 10 coins, he'd go like this and like this and like this. Big coins, small coins. And then part of this act, he would make a gold, little gold deity appear, and then it would disappear, and then some ash would come. He was imitating this well-known, Prabhupada would call him a cheater, whose followers claim that he's an incarnation of God. And the followers of that cheater, said Prabhupada, they got very angry at him. This magician told me the story. And one day, he went into the hospital for a checkup, some hospital. And there was a conspiracy against him. And they drugged him. He only went in for a checkup, and they drugged him. This is what he told me. And they operated on him, because they had told him, stop doing this. Stop with your sleight of hand making gold and ash appear. And he wouldn't do it. So they drugged him, they operated on him, and they cut out half his intestines. Such heavy people. Very heavy. This is what he told me. But he still was doing it. This, on the other hand, he cannot do. He can make some ash appear, some gold appear, but he cannot appear from someone's nostril the size of the tip of a thumb and then suddenly transform himself up into the sky as big as a mountain or as an elephant. Something extraordinary. He cannot show a universal form. Universes cannot come from the pores of his skin. He cannot expand himself into 16,108. Some little jadu, little magic he can do. But this is what is God. So seeing this wonderful occurrence, Lord Brahma thought, who else but the Lord could do this? Could it be that Lord Vishnu has appeared? Could bewilder the mind of even the most intelligent person. While Brahma was deliberating with his sons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, roared tumultuously like a great mountain. Here's Prabhupada's short purport. It appears that great hills and mountains also have their roaring power because they are also living entities. Indeed, when Prabhupada drove from New York City to the farm Gitanagari in Pennsylvania, he pointed to one mountain and said, this one previously was flying. Were you on the bus then? Oh, Radhadamodar Wala?
Not this one.
Missed that bus. But you heard that? That he had said that? Yeah. So while Brahma was guessing about the appearance of the Lord's incarnation as a boar, the Lord confirmed Brahma's contemplation by roaring with his gorgeous voice. So it wasn't an ordinary mountain roar, but it was very, very transcendentally sweet and powerful, gorgeous, because it was the Lord's roar. the omnipotent Supreme Personality of Godhead. Enliven Brahma and the other highly elevated Brahmins by again roaring with his uncommon voice, which echoed in all directions. So they were thinking, is this the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And he immediately confirmed that it was with his extraordinary, uncommon voice that roared like a mountain, but very gorgeous and sweet, transcendental. Prabhupada's short purport. Brahma and other enlightened Brahmanas who know the Supreme Personality of Godhead are enlivened by the appearance of the Lord in any of his multi-incarnations. The appearance of the wonderful and gigantic incarnation of Vishnu as the mountain-like boar did not fill them with any kind of fear, although the Lord's resounding voice was tumultuous and echoed horribly in all directions as an open threat to all demons who might challenge his omnipotency. So something is happening here. Brahma couldn't perform a deed. He said that only the Lord can do it. So here we're going to see one of the first incarnations of the Lord, and he's appeared in this extraordinary way to show us something very important, that Krishna is completely independent. He can appear in any form. And whatever form he appears in, whether it's the size of the top of one's thumb, or he's appearing as a lion, or he's appearing most astonishingly playing his flute, walking barefoot through the forest of Braja, still, he is transcendental, he is omnipotent. Why does he act in this way? Because he's completely independent. He does as he likes. He's not under anyone's jurisdiction. So very quickly, this all-powerful Lord is teaching us something and leading us to understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who will be shown in the 10th canto. Whatever form he's in, he's always all-powerful. However big he is, if he's roaring or playing his flute, it is transcendental and completely captivating. And he's omnipotent. And his potency challenges the atheists who say that I am God, or no one is God, or how could you be God? You're only this size, or you're doing this, or you're doing that. How could you be unlimited? You must be, the impersonal must be the supreme. He's challenging by this. The Bhagavatam is challenging by retelling the pastimes of the Lord that challenge all improper philosophy and establish the correct, full Vaishnava philosophy. So, more information. When the great sages and thinkers who were residents of Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka heard the tumultuous voice of Lord Bor, which was the all-auspicious sound of the all-merciful Lord, they chanted auspicious chants from the three Vedas. We'll read most of Prabhupada's purport. The word Mahamaya is very significant in this verse. Maya means mercy, specific knowledge, and also illusion. Therefore, Lord Bor is everything. He is merciful, he is all knowledge, and he is illusion also. The sound which he vibrated as the Bor incarnation was answered by the Vedic hymns of the great sages in the planets Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka. The highest intellectual and pious living entities live in those planets. And when they heard the extraordinary voice of the boar, they could understand that the specific sound was vibrated by the Lord and no one else. This is the most intelligent persons. This is their conclusion. The purest, the most subtle, the most pious individuals confirm that yes, this incredible being is none other than the Supreme Lord. They confirmed it. They were not foolish. A foolish man could say, oh, he's God, oh, he's God, oh, he's... because they lack knowledge of who God actually is. But these most elevated individuals, they replied by praying to the Lord with Vedic hymns. Because the Vedas, Vedes, Chasavar, Hameva, Vedyo, they are meant ultimately to know and glorify the Lord. The earth planet was submerged in the mire. But on hearing the sound of the Lord, the inhabitants of the higher planets were all jubilant because they knew that the Lord was there to deliver the earth. Playing like an elephant, he entered into the water after roaring again and replied to the Vedic prayers by the great devotees. So he reciprocated with their glorifying him through the Vedas by roaring again. Just imagine this scene. He was in the sky like an elephant playing in the sky. And he roared again for a third time. The Lord is the object of the Vedic prayers. And thus he understood that the devotees' prayers were meant for him. So this is, not only has he done something extraordinary, but the most learned, most subtle, most exalted personalities, they were using the Vedas to glorify him. They were confirming that, yes, here he is. And he's saying with his roar, yes, I am meant to be glorified by the Vedas. Prabhupada's purport. We're understanding through Prabhupada's purports the purpose of this incredible pastime. The form of the Lord in any shape is always transcendental and full of knowledge and mercy. So what immediately can you think? What is a practical application of this point? The form of the Lord in any shape is always transcendental and full of knowledge and mercy. Practically apply that to your life. This one simple, powerful sentence. Take something with this knowledge and do something wonderful with it. The form of the Lord in any shape is always transcendental and full of knowledge and mercy. Huh? Yes? What's something you can do with this one line of information? Are there any forms of the Lord around? Anyone happen to have any forms of the Lord? Well, guess what? What form are you thinking of when I said that? Who are you thinking of? The super soul. You carry one with you all the time. Pretty good. Who are you thinking of? Huh? Gonitai. Well, they're always transcendental. In any shape, is always transcendental. What does that mean, transcendental? He's beyond. Transcendental is a negative conception of something wonderful, is beyond. But he's full, this is a positive definition too. He's full of knowledge. And more than that, in more relevant in my particular case, he's also full of mercy. So all these forms are full of knowledge and mercy. Therefore, what? Therefore what? Worship them and also
surrender,
beg for their mercy, beg for their knowledge, beg for their bliss in service. All merciful forms, all. Good news, yeah? The Lord is the destroyer of all material contamination. Well, that's mercy, because it's material contamination that keeps us in the material world. Because his form is personified Vedic knowledge. So Veda means knowledge. So he's full of knowledge. His form is knowledge. Satchidananda, Vigraha. All the Vedas worship the transcendental form of the Lord. In the Vedic mantras, the devotees request the Lord to remove the glaring effulgence because it covers his real face. That is the version of the Ishapanishad. The Lord has no material form, but his form is always understood in terms of the Vedas. The Vedas are said to be the breath of the Lord, and that breath was inhaled by Brahma, the original student of the Vedas. The breathing from the nostril of Brahma caused the appearance of Lord Bor, and therefore the Bor incarnation of the Lord is the personified Vedas. So he inhaled Brahma inhaled the breath of the Lord, and he exhaled the form of the Vedas, known as Varaha, coming from his nostril. So, what are we understanding? That the Lord, in whatever form he's in, Lord Varaha, he is the form of the Vedas. He is the knowledge of the Vedas. He is the object of the Vedas. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. Personification of the Vedas. And because he's the personification of the Vedas, the glorification of the incarnation by the sages on the higher planets consisted of factual Vedic hymns. So the sages' prayers in glorification of the Lord we will hear soon, starting on text 34. So that's going to be the conclusion of the Vedas, practically speaking. Whenever there is glorification of the Lord, it is to be understood that Vedic mantras are being rightly vibrated. The Lord was therefore pleased when such Vedic mantras were chanted. And to encourage his pure devotees, he roared once more and entered the water to rescue the submerged earth. Before, this is text 27, before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Bor flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. His very glance was luminous, and he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks. He was personally the Supreme Lord Vishnu and was therefore transcendental. Yet, because he had the body of a hog, he searched after the earth by smell. When one sees the hogs of Vrindavan, raise your hand if you've seen a hog in Vrindavan. Has anyone not seen a hog in Vrindavan? I can show you where they hide and hang out. And they always have their nose to the ground. Always. Because they don't see, they have very poor eyesight. But this is their sense of perception. Their strongest sense of perception is their nose, their smelling capacity, their nostrils. So they always they find everything through that sense. And therefore, that Lord, he searched after the earth by his sense of smell. Why? Because he was in the form of a varaha, a boar. Does that mean that he had to do it because he was in the form of a boar? No. But this is how he wanted to act. He wanted to take on the form, the characteristic of a boar. And he glanced over the devotee brahmanas engaged in offering prayers. Thus, he entered the water. Purport. These are the important points that the pastime, philosophical points that the pastime is revealing. Prabhupada will explain further on this in his purport. We should always remember that although the body of a hog is material, the hog form of the Lord was not materially contaminated. It is not possible for an earthly hog to assume a gigantic form spreading throughout the sky, beginning from the Satyaloka. His body is always transcendental in all circumstances. Therefore, the assumption of the form of a boar is only his pastime. He is independent. He acts as he likes. We're being introduced to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. First introduction, he's all-powerful. Second, that means he can act exactly as he likes, and what he likes to do is his pastimes. This is our introduction to Krishna. Because the Bhagavatam is meant to lead us to Krishna. His body is all Vedas or transcendental. But since he had assumed the form of a boar, he began to search out the earth by smelling, just like a hog. The Lord can perfectly play the part of any living entity. The gigantic feature of the boar was certainly very fearful for all non-devotees, but to the pure devotees of the Lord, he was not at all fearful. On the contrary, he was so pleasingly glancing upon his devotees that all of them felt transcendental happiness. Before he entered the water, he glanced at his devotees, and that glance touched the heart of the devotees. It was his reciprocation with them. So much is done just by glance in spiritual life. Krishna's glancing at the residents of Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan glancing at Krishna. Because through the eyes, so much can be communicated. So his glance pleased the devotees because it was a love-laden glance. 29. Diving into the water like a great mountain. So no ordinary hog. Lord Boar divided the middle of the ocean, and two high waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly as if praying to the Lord. O Lord of all sacrifices, please do not cut me into two. Kindly give me protection. So powerful. Lord Boar penetrated the water with his hooves, which were like sharp arrows, and found the limits of the ocean, although it was unlimited. He saw the earth, the resting place for all living beings, lying as it was in the beginning of creation, and he personally lifted it. Lord Boar very easily took the earth on his tusks and got it out of the water. Thus, he appeared very splendid. Transcendentally beautiful. Then, his anger glowing like the Sudarshan wheel, the chakra, he immediately killed the demon Hiranyaksha, although he tried to fight with the Lord. So that is all that's going to be mentioned about the killing of Hiranyaksha in this point, but we'll hear about it in great detail. Because this point was not lost to the hearer. Who is the hearer who is hearing this? Vidura. And he's going to ask the question, you just mentioned about this, about he killed, why? Why did he do this? There's no explanation why. He's the all-powerful Lord. He's so beautiful. He's standing. And not only did he do it, his anger was glowing. He was angry and he killed this demon. Why? This will be the question that's asked. Thereupon, Lord Boar killed the demon within the water just as a lion kills an elephant. The cheeks and tongue of the Lord became smeared with the blood of the demon. Just as an elephant becomes reddish from digging in the purple earth. Then the Lord, playing like an elephant, suspended the earth on the edge of his curved white tusk. The Lord was standing. This Lord Boar was standing in one of his tusks. He took the earth and suspended it there. He balanced it there. The earth. And what did he do next? This was after rescuing the earth, after killing Hiranyaksha, and after suspending the earth in this way. He assumed a bluish complexion like that of a tamal tree. So there's a hint of someone else who has a complexion of the tamal tree there. And thus the sages, headed by Brahma, could understand him without a doubt to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they offered respectful obeisances unto the Lord. Now the next verses are the prayers of the sages, very important. All the sages uttered with great respect. Their words now are practically speaking the conclusion of the Vedas. This is what was said before. What is the conclusion of the Vedas? O unconquerable enjoyer of all sacrifices. Remember that Manu, what were the three instructions that Brahma gave Manu? What was one? The first one. Children. Second. Rule according to Dharma. And third. Second. Third. Perform jagya. Sacrifices. And the Vedas teach the performance of sacrifices. And who is the enjoyer of the sacrifice? Because something is sacrificed, something is given up. You sacrifice your life, you sacrifice, the parents sacrifice their energy for their children. Sacrifice, who is the goal of the sacrifices, that the pleasure of whom is the goal that all the sacrifices are meant to please, that Manu is going to perform? Here he is, the personified Vedas. The Lord of Sacrifices. The word in the verse, the Sanskrit is Jagya Bhavana. He, Jagya Bhavana, one who is understood by the performance of sacrifice. He is the enjoyer of sacrifice. And he is also Trayim, the personified Vedas. We're learning about the Supreme Personality of Godhead here. He is the object. So many people, they'll chant Vedic mantras, they'll chant religious, they'll perform religious rituals, they'll go through the performance of so many different religious things. But who is meant to be pleased by all this? What is the conclusion of it all? This point is being explained right here. The sages are explaining this. It is you, O Lord, regardless of what form you come in. It is always you, the person who is the Lord. And you are unconquerable, O unconquerable enjoyer of all sacrifices, all glories and all victories unto you. Now, if he's unconquerable, is he always going to be victorious? One would assume so. So why are they saying all victories to you? This is the difference between a devotee and a demon. The demons don't want the Lord to be victorious, and the devotees, they wish him victory at every moment. He will be victorious, so therefore the devotees will be victorious too, because they align their consciousness with his consciousness. This is the greatest of success formulas. Just find out what Krishna wants of you and then do it. And then, because he's always successful, he's always victorious, then you will always be victorious too. You are moving in your form as the personified Vedas. And in the hair holes of your body, the oceans are submerged. For certain reasons, you have now assumed the form of a boar. And Prabhupada inserts the reason to uplift the earth. But whatever reason you happen to do what you do, you come for that reason, and it's your reason. Could there be other ways that he could have lifted the earth if he wanted to? He could have made this incredible crane or something. Or he could have just willed it, desired earth lift, like wood submerged in the ocean will lift, come to the top. He could do it anyway. But this is how he decided to do it, because he wanted to perform a pastime. And we're explaining so many philosophical points that we can derive from the pastime, but these are not the ultimate reason why he does it. The ultimate reason is because he wants to. That is the meaning of being independent. And he's the only one, and this is a very hard thing for me to accept, he's the only one who can do whatever he wants. He's the only one who can do what he wants. Sometimes we have an issue with this point with him. Because he's supremely powerful. The laws of material nature that restrict everyone do not restrict them. They play under his control. So this is the ultimate reason why he acts. This is the ultimate reason why he likes Vrindavan, and he likes cows, and he plays the flute, and he walks around barefoot. Because he is a person, and persons have likes and dislikes. And this is what he likes. Purport. The Lord can assume any form he likes. He likes. He wants to do it. He's a person. This is what he likes. And in all circumstances, he's the cause of all causes. Regardless of the form, he's still the omnipotent, all-powerful Lord. And since his form is transcendental, he's always the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he is in the causal ocean in the form of Mahavishnu, which we have heard about and we will hear about again and again in the third canto. And then we won't hear about it again and again and again until the 11th canto. But we're going to hear about the creation, because we have to have this point firmly fixed in our consciousness that he is the Supreme Lord and he's all powerful. Regardless of the form he comes in, he is not different from that Lord who is lying in the causal ocean. Karanadakshaya Vishnu. Innumerable universes generate from the holes of his bodily hairs, and thus his transcendental body is the Vedas personified. He is the enjoyer of all sacrifices. He is the unconquerable Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is never to be misunderstood to be other than the Supreme Lord because of his assuming the form of a boar to lift the earth. He is always the Supreme. He is always God. persons who have materialistic conceptions cannot accept this. It sounds, they will say, this is mythology. God assumes the form of a boar and comes out of the nostril of Brahma. It is amazing. But if one doesn't have either the proper sanskaras or the proper explanation, it sounds like mythology. But looking at it from the other side, if he wants to do this, why does he want to do it? Because he likes to do it, and no other explanation is ultimately accurate. If he likes to do this, who is going to stop him? Because he's unconquerable, try and stop him like Hiranyaksha did. Who is going to stop him if he desires it? Who? Not the people who say that it's mythology, certainly. Not the impersonalists. The authorities, remember again, this is the prayers of the residents, the most subtle enlightened beings. This is the clear understanding of the great personalities like Brahma and other residents of the higher planetary systems. Now they're going to explain in the next verses, next few verses, how he, his transcendental body, relates to the Vedic form of sacrifices, none different from it. O Lord, your form is worshipable by performance of sacrifice. And again, see the irony of this to make the point that what is the dirtiest animal, the dirtiest of dirty animals? This, just look out in the sewers of, make a scientific research. Go out in the dirtiest places in Vrindavan, and on a hot day, what will you find? These pigs, these hogs. And they're in the dirtiest sewers. The dirtiest of animals. When the Lord is in that form, he's transcendental. And who are the cleanest? There's the dirtiest, and who's the cleanest? The pure Brahmins. And the pure Brahmins are worshipping the Lord in this form. This is wonderful. And how? By the Vedas. They're not, when you see a pig, or one of these Vrindavan pigs running around with his nose to the ground from the sewer, covered with the sewers, what is your only thought, practically speaking? What? Escape. Yeah, I just hope we start praying. I hope he doesn't come in this direction. And here, the Vedas are worshiping him because he's, whatever form he's in, he's always the Supreme Lord. But souls who are simply miscreants are unable to see it. All the Vedic hymns, Gayatri and others are in touch, in the touch of your skin. In your bodily hairs is the kusha grass. In your eyes is the clarified butter. And in your four legs are the four kinds of fruit of activities. How ironic, because the food, when the animal sees food, he looks at it and it's in his eyes. So the butter is in his eyes. It's being, what is being offered in sacrifice. It's pure. It's being offered to him. O Lord, your tongue is the plate of sacrifice. Your nostril is another plate of sacrifice. In your belly is the eating place of sacrifice. And another plate of sacrifice is the holes of your ears. In your mouth is the Brahma plate of sacrifice. Your throat is the plate of sacrifice known as Soma. And whatever you chew is known as Agnihotra. Because the Agnihotra is the offering the oblations into the fire. Agni is the tongue of the Lord, is how he eats. Moreover, O Lord, the repetition of your appearance is the desire for all kinds of initiation. Your neck is the place for the three desires. Your tusks are the results of initiation and the end of all desires. Your tongue is the prior activities of initiation. Your head is the fire without sacrifice, as well as the fire of worship. And your living forces are the aggregate of all desires. O Lord, your semen is the sacrifice called Soma Jagya. Your growth is the ritualistic performances of the morning. Your skin and touch sensations are the seven elements of the Agni Stoma sacrifice. So how this Lord, this Varahadeva, is composed of all the elements of sacrifice. Your bodily joints are symbols of various other sacrifices. Every point of his body is transcendental. Therefore, you are the object of all sacrifice, called Soma and Asoma, and you are bound by Jagyas only. O Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you are worshipable by universal prayers, Vedic hymns, and sacrificial ingredients. We offer our obeisances unto you. You can be realized. How is it possible to realize this Lord and his congruence with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with the knowledge acquired in the Vedas? How is it possible to realize him? Realize by the pure mind, freed. What does pure mean? It means it is free from impurities, amal. Freed from all visible and invisible material contamination. Pure mind freed from material contamination. What does it mean to be freed from material contamination? What does it mean when the mind is free from material contamination? Yes, but that's what it's free. Okay, what is it free from?
Free from mundane self-aversion.
And? Okay, but what's it free from? I mean, I'm thinking simply. What's it free from? Three modes of material nature. Goodness, passion, ignorance. What is pure mind? Free from? Yeah, yes. Right, but instead of making you try to guess what I'm thinking, I'll just tell you. Yeah, from any material, any self-centered desire. No self-centered, all self-centered desires are centered around the ahankar, the false ego, and they will entangle us in the material world further, and therefore they are considered sinful. Anya abhilasita sunyam. Anya abhilas. Sunyam. All other desires, sunyam. Zero. Finish. Pure mind. Jana karma anavrita. No desires, self-centered desires of jnana and karma. Can realize by the pure mind. That's important, isn't it? If we want to realize Krishna, we have to have pure minds. That means sattvam visuddham, pure, fixed, vasudeva sablitam. We offer respectful obeisances to you as the Supreme Spiritual Master of Knowledge and Devotional Service. So Prabhupada immediately in the purport speaks on this point. The qualification of bhakti or devotional service to the Lord is that the devotee should be free from all material contaminations and desires, all selfishness, Krishna-centered, Bhagavad Dharma, wanting to please Krishna. This freedom is called vairagya, a renouncement of material desires. One who engages in devotional service to the Lord according to regulative principles is automatically freed from material desires. Think about that. Anything interesting about that? Anything? Huh?
It's worth it.
What is worse?
To take shelter
of the Lord. Oh, worth it, yes. But one who engages in devotional service to the Lord according to the regulative principles is automatically freed from material desires. So let's make this into a logical syllogism. Therefore, one who is not freed from material desires... Okay, I won't talk about that anymore. Bhakti is very rare, actually. Sudhulavam. The personality of Godhead being situated in everyone's heart instructs the devotee regarding pure devotional service that he may ultimately achieve the association of the Lord. So if we wish Krishna to instruct us and help us, he will. How to purify the heart? Srinvatam svakata Krishna punya shravana kirtanam ridyanta. Krishna himself will do it. Ridyanta sto abhadrani. It's all abhadrani, inauspicious. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Tesham satate yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mama bhyantate. To one who constantly engages in the devotional service of the Lord with faith and love, the Lord certainly gives the intelligence to achieve him at the ultimate end. Devotional service, constantly faith and love. The great sages continue. O lifter of the earth with its mountains, which you have lifted with your tusks, is situated as beautifully as a lotus flower with leaves sustained by an infuriated elephant just coming out of the water. O Lord, as the peaks of great mountains become beautiful when decorated with clouds, your transcendental body has become beautiful because of your lifting the earth on the edge of your tusks. O Lord, for the residential purposes of all inhabitants, both moving and non-moving, the earth is your wife, this earth is your wife, and you are the Supreme Father who was born out of this union between the earth and Lord Bor? Bhaumasura, also known as Narakasura. Isn't that amazing? That an asura was born out of this incredibly auspicious combination of the Lord who lifted the earth with his tusks. An asura was born, very unlikely. Yes? But why was he an asura? That's also described in... You know why? Huh?
Lord is angry.
Bad association. Asatsang tyag, evaishnavachar. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you, along with Mother Earth, in whom you have invested your own potency. And as a result, Narakasura was born, Bhaumasura. Just as an expert sacrificer puts fire in the Arani wood. Who else but you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, could deliver the earth from within the water? No one else could, but you could do it. It is not very wonderful for you, however, because you acted most wonderfully in the creation of the universe. For he who is the creator of the universe lifting the earth is nothing. By your energy, you have created this wonderful cosmic manifestation. It is the same Lord who creates everything, has now done this, has taken this form, and is being worshipped by the Vedas. Prabhupada's last line in the purport, or first line, says, a common man may think this is wonderful. How is this possible? But for the Lord who creates the universe, it's not difficult at all. After all, what does omnipotent mean? What does it mean to be all-powerful? And the last line, a devotee is therefore not astonished to see the wonderful boar, because he knows that the Lord is able to act far more wonderfully by his potencies, which are inconceivable to the brain of even the most erudite scientist. The most wonderful thing, Krishna can do still more wonderful things. Easily. O Supreme Lord, undoubtedly, we are inhabitants of the most pious planets, the Jana, Tapas, and Satyalokas, but still we have been purified by the drops of water sprinkled from your shoulder hairs by the shaking of your body. This is one of the abominable habits of ordinary hogs. They get into the sewer water, and then when they come out, they shake their bodies, and the worst thing that can happen to you is if their water that they're shaking from their bodies somehow lands on you. Oh, but these most elevated, so if it hasn't struck us yet that this is Lord Boru, who's completely transcendental, here's the ultimate proof that when he shakes his body, this Lord Varahadev, the water that comes off of him is purifying to the most elevated and pure sages, and they're longing to be sprinkled with that water. Absolute and transcendental water. And the final prayer that they offer, and we'll read the purport. O Lord, and this summarizes their prayer. And this is the Vedas. This is the conclusion of the Vedas. O Lord, there is no limit to your wonderful activities. But until we get to the 10th canto, we don't really know what that means. We're thinking of bigger and more powerful unlimitedly. He can lift 10 earths from the ocean. He can lift 1,000 earths or 1,000,000,000 earths or 1,000,000,000 universes. But still more wonderful activities will be revealed. There is no limit to your wonderful activities. Anyone who desires to know the limit of your activities is certainly nonsensical. What does nonsensical mean? Huh? Crazy. What else? Illogical, foolish. This is one word that even in Bengal, if someone doesn't know any other word of English, if you're talking to your friend and you say this, I've had this happen, this is how I know. You say, this ritual is nonsense. He knows that word, be careful. And they don't like it. Nonsense, foolish, fool, rascal. Anyone who tries to plumb the depths of the Lord's activities is nonsensical. Everyone in this world is conditioned by the powerful mystic potencies, yogamaya, yad yogamaya, yad yogamaya guna yoga mohitam. Everyone in this world is under the control of the yogamaya of the Lord, the Mahamaya of the Lord, Vishram Samastam Bhagavan Videhi Sam. How are we going to get out of this? We're bewildered, bewitched, enchanted by Maya, by the glitter of Maya. We can't understand the Lord. How are we going to become free? Please bestow your causeless mercy upon these conditioned souls. Somehow, only by causeless mercy, the curtain will lift, and then we shall know something. Purport. Mental speculators. So this is the conclusion. Mental speculators who want to understand the limit of the unlimited are certainly nonsensical. Every one of them is captivated by the external potencies of the Lord. The best thing for them is to surrender unto Him. And the best thing for us, similarly, is to surrender unto Him, knowing Him to be inconceivable. For thus they can receive His causeless mercy. This prayer was offered by the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems, namely the Janatapas and Satyalokas, who are far more intelligent and powerful than humans. Visham Samastam is very significant here. There are both the material worlds and the spiritual worlds. The sages pray. Here is a paraphrasing of their prayer by Prabhupada. Both worlds are bewildered by your different energies. Material and spiritual worlds. Those who are in the spiritual world are absorbed in your loving service, forgetting themselves and you also. And those in the material world are absorbed in material sense gratification and therefore also forget you. But there is a gulf of difference between the qualities of forgetfulness, certainly. No one can know you. Forgetting you means forgetting your position as the Supreme, All-Powerful Lord. Both those devotees in the spiritual world forget that He's the Supreme Lord, and the non-devotees in the material world also forget. No one can know you because you're unlimited. It is best not to try to know you by unnecessary mental speculation. Rather, kindly bless us so that we can worship you with causeless devotional service. So thus end their prayers. Very nice prayers. The sage Maitreya, who was reciting this to whom? This pastime. And why was he saying it to Vidura? He asked, yes. He said, the Lord, thus being worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists, touched the earth with his hooves and placed it on the water. In this manner, the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the maintainer of all living entities, raised the earth from within the water, and having placed it afloat on the water, he returned to his own abode. If one hears, now we've heard this to more or less degrees, but we've heard this. Now here is the Phal Shruti, the result of hearing this. If one hears and describes in a devotional attitude, so both of is good. This auspicious narration of Lord Bor, which is worthy of description, the Lord who is within the heart of everyone is very pleased. That is the result. And Prabhupada explains in the last line of his purport, out of his causeless mercy, the Lord comes to this earth and leaves behind his merciful activities so that the devotees may derive transcendental benefit. Because by hearing about the activities, he comes and performs the pastime. So by hearing the pastimes, we benefit both by speaking and by hearing them. Because he is pleased. And then what occurs when the Lord is pleased? Text 49. Nothing remains unachieved when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with someone. So this again is the purpose of religion, of activities, to somehow or another change the center of our miserable conditioned hearts from our selfish, false, ego-centered selves, imagining that we are the center, to try to reverse that and try to please Krishna. And if one does that, nothing remains unachieved when someone pleases Krishna. By transcendental achievements, one can understand everything else to be insignificant. One who engages in transcendental loving service is elevated to the highest perfectional stage by the Lord Himself, who is seated in everyone's heart. He does it if one pleases Him. We'll read this purport, the next verse, and then the final purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 10.10, the Lord gives intelligence to the pure devotees so that they may be elevated to the highest perfectional stage. It is confirmed herein that a pure devotee who constantly engages in the loving service of the Lord is awarded all knowledge necessary to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For such a devotee, there is nothing valuable to be achieved but the Lord's service. If one serves faithfully, there is no possibility of frustration because the Lord Himself takes charge of the devotee's advancement. The Lord is seated in everyone's heart, and He knows the devotee's motive and arranges everything achievable. In other words, the pseudo-devotee who is anxious to achieve material gains cannot attain the highest perfectional stage because the Lord is in knowledge of his motive. That means that because the pseudo-devotee wants another result, the Lord is conscious of that result and he awards him with that result. He doesn't get the supreme result because he doesn't desire the supreme result. He desires material gain, so yayatamam prapadyante, so he gets that material gain. Because the Lord is conscious of the motive. One, listen to this very simple sentence. One merely has to become sincere in his purpose, and then the Lord is there to help in every way. That is Krishna consciousness in one simple sentence. One merely has to become sincere in his purpose, and then Krishna will help. On one hand, that is the problem. We should deal with the problem at its root. And the natural result of attempting to deal with the problem at its root, is trinarapi sunichena turodapi sihisnena. We think so many other things are the problem, but when we understand that this is the problem, then the problem will lead to the solution, which is humility. Final verse. This is Maitreya speaking. He's very excited. Who other than one who is not a human being? In other words, who other than an animal can exist in this world and not be interested in the ultimate goal of life? Who can refuse the nectar of narrations about the personality of Godhead's activities, which by itself can deliver one from all material pangs? So in the first canto, or second canto, we've already heard Shonaka Rishi speaking like this, and the final purport, the narration of the activities of the personality of Godhead is like a constant flow of nectar. No one can refuse to drink such nectar except one who is not a human being. Devotional service to the Lord is the highest goal of life for every human being. And such devotional service begins by hearing about the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. Only an animal or a man who is almost an animal in behavior can refuse to take an interest in hearing the transcendental message of the Lord. There are many books of stories and histories in the world, but except for the histories or narrations on the topics of the personality of Godhead, none are capable of diminishing the burden of material pangs. Therefore, one who is serious about eliminating material existence must chant and hear of the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. Otherwise, one must be compared to the non-humans. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the third canto, 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Appearance of Lord Viraha. Lord Viraha Deva ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yes, Manji. Yes. No, I would like you to tell us about it. Oh, there's a disciplic succession in this one, by the way. I think Sahoja Swami found it originally. Yeah. No, go ahead. No cracks, no wax. Okay. Yes, the fragrance of the earth. Oh, yes, that's really interesting. Oh, that's inspired. Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Haranyaksha? We'll get to him soon. Anyone have an answer? Yes? But he wasn't on the earth. But it describes what he was doing, his activities during this time. That will be later. Maharaj. Yes. If I remember correctly, later on this is described, that he actually put it there because this comes out later, because he had to fight with Haranyaksha. Because he was giving him so much trouble, he put it down temporarily on the ocean, on the Garbhodak Ocean, and touched it so it would float, so it wouldn't sink back down again. And then he killed him, and then... And then, well, anyway, why don't you ask that again if it's not clarified when we read it in more detail later.
You know also that the question that I was curious about yesterday was how is it that the earth might have fell down from its orbit in the first place, but it wasn't straight or manifest as far as the rock? What was the original reason why the earth fell down?
Well, it's not clear that it actually fell down. We were discussing this yesterday.
Yeah, I spoke with two devotees from my country and they confirmed my belief. They also heard that
yes, but we haven't read anything to that effect yet. But the closest thing we came to an answer yesterday was that at the time of devastation, everything goes down there to the bottom of the Garbhodak Ocean. All the planets go down there. So, didn't we read that in a purport yesterday? You pointed that out?
Yeah.
They're situated there, and one could...
The
Garbhodak Ocean. And therefore, it could be, that it just, because this was the beginning of a new day of Brahma, that the earth. Yes?
I was reading on this point yesterday,
yes.
And I asked. This discussion how earth fall down, and you told me that I should do research on this.
Yes.
I was looking ahead, and there is one, there are descriptions of activities of Hiranyaksha. There is one section which is not supporting this theory.
Yes.
That the earth was forgotten at the bottom, that the Brahma spirit is not lifted. Because there are descriptions that donkeys were running hither and thither on the earth, and the birds were, I don't know, doing something on the earth. There is description that something was happening on the earth before it fell down. So the earth fell down.
Anyway, as long as we don't talk about why the jiva fell down, I don't care why the earth fell down personally. Yes? No, not necessarily, because he said such nasty things to Lord Bora, and that got him very angry. Pierced his heart, his words pierced his heart. So, yes? Maybe it's in the Puranic encyclopedia or something. Similar disturbance to what? Ah, where is that? So it was detached and it fell down.
Due to disturbance of that Hiranyaksha caused.
There we go. The good name of Croatian preaching has been restored, lifted up by Varahadeva. Okay, any other 3 minutes worth of question?
In 26, old Russian, we see that the Vedas are said to be the
best. Excuse me, listen. Yes, except to Brahma.
Brahma actually was obedient.
So you're making a comment?
Yeah. It looks like Brahma is medium to reveal the world to mankind.
Yeah, this is the principle. This is the principle that the Lord has to be achieved by being a devotee, of the Lord. Last question or comment?
You know, when Christian preacher, he once asked, why your Lord get married? And actually, you see our Lord Jesus never married. I asked simple question, another one question. Why not? Only Christian can do anything and everything. Why he should not marry? And yes. He answer. Because yes. He previously asked so many Hindu people and he tried to convert.
Yeah, there's a famous story about that one too. You see that corner over there? Careful. There's a famous story that came out. There was some court case recently that said was criticizing. Excuse me. There's plenty of corners. You have to be careful too. Some nun or some priest was saying that your God, you know, he got married. Our God didn't get married. So one of the devotees said, then how come all the nuns, they wear rings? What does that ring signify? Who is your on the witness stand? They asked the nuns, who are you married to that you're wearing a wedding ring? And they were criticizing. Krishna marries 16,000 wives. So there's so many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of nuns. And who do they marry by that? It signifies that they married Jesus. So you can also... Oh, he's allowed to marry, but Krishna can't. So many nuns and Krishna can't. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Prabhupada ki jai.